thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Hey there.
Here's John Williams.
We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, downtown Chicago. This is John Williams. We're here weekdays till 3.
Lord have mercy.
Remember, on social media, WGN King John, I posted some nice news this morning on my Facebook page. WGN King John, you'll see me there on Facebook. I don't know if it was nice news or not, but here's what I did. My intentions are always good. But I was watching the CBS Morning News today, and they had on a report about the Dow and what the markets are doing. Right now, we're at 23,776. We're up 182. But we're down a bit for the year, and I think people are nervous about it, and maybe understandably so. And the reporter was there, and she was just talking about how, you know, bull markets don't run forever. She said trees don't grow to the sky. And so there's a correction, and we're due for one. And this is what markets do. And she says, I know this doesn't feel normal, but it kind of is normal. Anyway, then I went back and looked to see where the Dow has been over the last 2 years. And if you take where the Dow was 2 years ago versus where it is today, that overall chart looks pretty. You would take that. You would take that, except for the last 6 months. You don't like that. But it, depending on how long your horizon is, going forward or backwards, it's not so terrifying. I don't know if that's just a salve that I'm applying and it's actually not that medicinal. I don't even know what I just said, but maybe that's not all that helpful. Maybe that's not, you know, all that indicative of anything that's really good. But it looks good. It feels good. So I posted that on Facebook, and it's at least an interesting chart and article that goes with it. And I'm WGN King John on Facebook. We reached out to Bob Westrick at Private Vista. I asked him if he'd kind of put all of this into some perspective for us, and he should join us around 2:35 if he can. Penny Marshall has passed away. You just heard Kim do that in the news. And so then do you do what I do when somebody famous dies like that? You immediately start to sort of play their IMDb back in your head. Penny Marshall, okay, so that means League of Their Own. That means Laverne and Shirley. That means Big, where she was a director. She died peacefully in her Hollywood Hills home due to complications from diabetes at the age of 75. Our family is heartbroken over the passing of Penny Marshall, the Marshall family said in a statement. This is what I was doing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Schlemiesel.
Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated.
I wasn't a big fan of the show, and I know that's the line. I'm reading it now in front of me, and I can't quote it because it's not that near and dear to my heart, but she sure seemed to be a nice and talented lady. A spinoff of Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, starred Marshall as the feisty Laverne DeFazio and Williams as the idealistic Shirley Feeney, two 1950s working-class roommates who worked on an assembly line at the Schatz Brewery in Milwaukee.
I mean, those shows, you know, I'm sure were a real big boost to Milwaukee in the 70s. Happy Days was set there, and then...
Oh, that's right.
The scenes of the Laverne and Shirley, the opening was shot in them running around downtown. I think in City Hall was one shot.
You know, as much as we love Chicago being featured in movies and TV shows, imagine if you're just one tier down, if you're a Milwaukee, that's got to feel even better, especially since they were such nice, you know, shows. They weren't making fun of Milwaukee. You know, they were good people and you rooted for them. Maybe sort of what Boston and Cheers had for each other in a way.
Don't forget Lenny and Squiggy. I think there was a spinoff of that too, wasn't there like a... Didn't they have their own show briefly, or one of them did?
Boy, you're talking to the wrong guy.
Where were you in the 70s, man?
I was busy that day. Wow. Here's a picture of her. I'll hold it up to the microphone. Penny Marshall with brother Gary Marshall at the some sort of TV awards in 2008. Boy, talk about a talented family, huh? So that's sad. By the way, speaking of celebrities, did you get a chance to read the piece about Ellen? And what a nice person she isn't. She's got a new special that's out. Is that on HBO today, Elif? Is that Netflix today? And in it, gasp, Elif curses. She's got this, you know, cheery homespun image. And to read the article, it's kind of a burden. And I totally understand this. She did, in the article, And she says, like, people will come up to me and they'll go, Ellen, Ellen, can we get a picture? And she doesn't want to take a picture all the time. And they say, Ellen, you're not dancing. And she'll go, yeah, I'm not on TV. But, you know, people just want her to be up, fun, great Ellen. And sometimes if you're Ellen, you don't want to be Ellen for people. And it's exhausting for those guys, even for Ellen.
It's like the actors from Friends, for example, who say, like, David Schwimmer is not Ross. And people go up to them going, you're Rachel and you're Ross.
Yeah, but it's different because her name is Ellen and she presents herself as Ellen.
I know, but it's still the same concept. Though you're presenting yourself a certain way on TV, it's always acting. John's acting now. You're acting now. I'm not attacking your characters, by the way. You're both really nice people, but you put a different part of your personality on the TV, on the screen.
Well, if, for instance, Steve and I are having a bad day right now, we're not advertising that. We are presenting. We're trying to be positive. We're trying to be up. We're trying to be entertaining. And maybe in our real lives, when the microphones come off, Lord knows our producers understand this, we're not in a cheery mood. We're not Steve and John having fun, thinking big thoughts.
I hope that didn't come off the wrong way.
No, I think it came off exactly right. I get it, and you're right.
John Zamini, I get it.
I know you are. I know you are. What am I? But I mean, sure, it requires, to me, I mean, I'm a microcosm of this, right? I do a nice radio show at a really big radio station in a really big city, so I understand a little bit about this, but I mean, it's a fraction, right? Of what an Ellen or a member of Friends cast has to go through.
No, I didn't read the article.
But people expect you, if I may, Steve, just real quick, but there's a certain amount of energy that goes into doing it, and sometimes it's not that you're even in a bad mood, but you just don't want to be on right now.
Trust me, I go out and people, time after time, come up to me over and over, and they're like, what's John really like? And it just gets old.
They do not.
Was Ellen, I suspect, our hope wasn't complaining about it, though, right?
A little, yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's too bad, because she's made a gazillion dollars off
I
of
know
us.
That, but I don't think it's too bad. I think it's honest. I think it's 100% okay. She doesn't have to reveal that. She doesn't do articles. She doesn't do interviews. I mean, one of the reasons that maybe she is because she's got this Netflix special coming out. But you don't read a lot of, you know, stuff about Ellen or her wife. They are a couple, and there's been some reporting on that, but you know, she's not regularly featured in things, and she's kind of showing her a fuller version of herself. She doesn't have to do that, but I sure allow it. I mean, if she wants to, she can, and I don't think we need to think any less of her.
Well, I'm not going to go up to her now.
Well, and you know what? I don't think you should. Or I don't think you should go up to her and ask her to dance. Or to be honest with you, who was it that I was reading about who regularly turns down selfies? And they'll say, you know, I'll talk to you, but I'm not going to pose with you. And I can understand why at some point that just becomes kind of an ongoing nuisance, and the only way to deal with it is to just say no. And, you know, each individual walks away with, well, yeah, you think Ellen's great? All I did was say, how about a selfie? And they said no. And then it sounds like they're dismissive as some sort of prima donna. But I suspect if you want to live your life at some point, you have to say, I just can't do it anymore. I'm not enjoying this. John, call me when the stock market trip balls. Oh, this must be a voice to text. John, call me when the stock market trip balls. I think they meant triples. John, I hope so, because that's not called trip balls. It's called triples.
Actually, we're just getting word of a rare trip ball on Wall Street.
like it did during the Obama administration, and stop lying about it. The stock market tripled. I don't know what you're talking about. I know that the market was down and it went up under the Obama administration. We're not talking about that. ABC Morning News said if you invested $100 in the market a year ago today, you would have $95. Yeah, we're down for the year. John, similar to Robin Williams. I'm not sure what that's about, similar to Robin Williams.
Yeah, everyone goes up to Robin Williams and talks to him.
Or
expects him to be Robin Williams.
Or when someone passes away, you immediately start to replay their inventory in your mind and and think about that.
I mean, there's a real difference, though, in that Ellen is presenting herself as herself on her TV show.
Right.
You know? I mean, Robin Williams is playing characters, or he's always on. Yes, I get that. But, you know, she's saying, I'm Ellen. It's Ellen, you know. So people, I think it's more reasonable that they would expect her to be more Ellen-like.
Yeah, sure. Well, I, you know, I'm not saying that she's a fraud. I hope I don't sound like I'm saying that. But I think she's saying I'm a fuller person than you may know on TV. I mean, how good is the TV show, Steve, if she goes, hi, I'm Ellen. I don't want to dance today. And frankly, I'm in a crappy mood. No, you kind of put your big boy pants on and you go to work. But then if afterwards, you know, outside of the TV show or the studio, you don't want to be that person, I don't think you owe it to anybody. Unrelated to that, but just speaking of celebrities, I'll finish this story. I sure have been thinking about Pete Davidson lately, who does look like a person. He looks like a person living on the edge. That doesn't mean anything, though, right? People have personas and they have appearances, and sometimes you can't judge them by that. But there was an Instagram post, I think, right? It might have been on other platforms, but quote, I really don't want to be on this earth anymore. I'm doing my best to stay here for you, but I actually don't know how much longer I can last.
I don't know how to react to that because I feel like we should just leave him alone. You know, what a terrible thing to be going through that in the whole country. You know, every time you look up at a TV screen, you see a picture of him in the verbatim of that. And yet, I think a lot of us think we care a lot about him and want the best for him, too. You know what I'm saying?
No, he posted that on social media.
I know, but he's going through... But it seems as if he's going through a terrible time.
Yeah.
And the whole country's talking about it.
Yeah.
I'm with Steve on that.
What are we supposed to do? I mean, what are we doing wrong?
I don't know.
What are we doing wrong?
I don't know. I don't know how... It's like, I think I started by saying I'm not sure how to react to it because I think we're... reveling. I mean, I don't know what the right word is.
Well, here's the word. First of all, your reaction is he's not aware of your reactions, right? So you can react
any way. Every time he looks up at a TV, John, he sees his picture with the quote of him. So,
well, you didn't do that.
I'm saying we as a country, we are doing it.
I think your personal obligation would be if you saw him on the street, don't come up and do the Ellen conversation with him, right? Say, hey, Pete, how's Ariana Grande? Ha, ha, ha. Or do the thing you did on TV Saturday night, right? Let him be. But I think, Lord, isn't it a classic cry for help? Isn't it a guy asking for some sympathy or some support?
Yeah, but we're not the people to give it to him. We're in a way, and like I said, I think I feel sincerely for him. I really want him to succeed. But I think we're also talking over the back fence about our neighbor. Oh, look at this.
Okay, I think I'm with you on that, John. Because I'm
so fickle. You're so fickle.
No, I misunderstood
your point. No, I think she's making great sense. Go ahead. What are you about to say?
Well, I think a lot of us do care about him. I care about him because he's my age and he's on the top of his industry. And I'm assuming that his dream was to become a comedian, and he's on Saturday Night Live.
And I think he's a tortured individual.
Yeah, and he has mental problems. He's a human being. And
yeah, but listen, this is exactly what I'm talking about. We're having this conversation as if we know this guy, and we're talking about very private things about him on a radio station in Chicago.
Yeah, but don't you care about Amy Winehouse, for example? But she died because she overdosed, and I'm saying this because I just watched her documentary.
It's amazing, Amy. And nobody was there for her.
Yeah, her dad.
Everybody that was there for her was abusing their position with her. I mean, Amy should be alive today. She should be writing and singing today. She's not. It's amazing that Amy Winehouse was allowed to... No, that's the wrong word, isn't it? But it's amazing, given the opportunity for support and help that she had, that it wasn't available to her, and that the people that were closest to her did not help her. I don't know how that lends itself to a conversation about Pete Davidson, but... I don't feel like this conversation or, say, BuzzFeed. I mean, unless they're doing something, you know, odd or awkward or dark about it, I don't see the harm in talking about it, particularly since maybe other people might benefit from it.
Well, the three of us have each diagnosed him in the past 3 minutes.
We have. Well, with only the best intentions, I don't think we're that wrong.
He said it himself that he has mental problems.
I mean, I think that's pretty well documented. We need to pause. It's 1:22. Dr. John Williams on WGN.
Academy Award-winning director Robert Zemeckis.
And Academy Award nominee Steve Carell.
Join us in studio to talk about their newest collaboration, Welcome to Marwen.
And up front in our prize closet, some serious Blackhawk swag. We'll give it away after 4.
Roe and Anna, this afternoon on 720 WGN.
Chicagoland homeowners, there's never been a better time to permanently fix your low water pressure, rusty water, and pipe leaks by repiping your home than today. The Repipe Specialists have been serving Chicagoland for many years, collectively repiping over 35,000 homes in their 25-plus years. They've built their reputation on offering the most efficient repipe process for seamless installation and customer convenience, repiping an entire home in just 1 to 2 days, patching the walls, and providing a lifetime guarantee. The Repipe Specialists only use the best repiping materials with U.S.-grade L-copper or high-quality PEX pipes. For a limited time, get 20% off and 0% interest on your repipe job for an entire year on approved credit. That's right, for a limited time, get 20% off and 0% interest for an entire year on approved credit. The Repipe Specialists provide a free in-home estimate explaining the process tailored for your home. Call Repipe Specialists today for your free in-home estimate at 800-216-0195, 800-216-0195. That's 800-216-0195.
Hi, my name is Ramona. I'm a caseworker at Catholic Charities. I wish you could meet Craig, age 23, shot 3 times and homeless for 2 years before I met him. The more we met and I listened to him, the more he impressed me. We're working on his resume and job hunting. We're called Chicago's Good Samaritan, and you can be one too. Might you have a job for Craig and thousands of others like him? Join us at CatholicCharities.net.
Time is 1:24 on WGN. When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV. The Illinois Bone and Joint Institute has more advanced fellowship-trained physicians than at any other orthopedic practice in the Midwest, with the most comprehensive medical, diagnostic, and rehabilitative services. IBJI has more than 100 orthopedic specialists, rheumatologists, podiatrists, pain medicine physicians, and more. Plus, their Ortho Access immediate care facilities welcome walk-ins to treat your aches, your breaks, your twists, your sprains. Visit IBJI.com to find the facility or specialist nearest you. I think I'm going to go there just for the luxury of being able to walk into a physician's office and get right in. I had an appointment with my ophthalmologist yesterday. He is a great guy. Dr. Tana is over at Northwestern Medicine. And I've been going to him for years. I moved up to Minnesota for years and then came back. And I was so happy that he was still there. So I thought, I got to get my glaucoma checked or see if I have, it's in my family. So I thought, I'm going to check on that again. I'll call Dr. Tana. They said, okay, we'll get you right in. How about 3 months? And so 3 months came up and my date was there. And I wanted to keep that appointment, of course. But then something came up, and all of a sudden yesterday was going to be less than convenient. And so I said, hey, listen, I've been waiting 3 months. Any chance we could just make it 3 months in a day or 3 months in 2 days? And they go, well, it doesn't really work like that. But we can get you in February. I'm like, oh, no. The reason I'm getting it checked is not because I don't want to get it checked. I want to get it checked now. In fact, I wanted to get it checked 3 months ago. Not 3 months from now. That would have been 6 months from when I first thought I should do something about this. And that was because I'd put it off for a while. So no, I don't want to do it in 3 more months. You can't move it a day? Nope. Can you move it an hour? Nope. Could you move it a week? Nope. But we can get you in February. And then I did what most patients do when they're asking for a little leverage like that. They say, okay, well, then I'll go. Then I'll keep the appointment. I'm available. And I'm glad I did. He was a really good doctor and a really nice guy. But boy, this says here in this little commercial, visit IBJI.com to find the facility or specialist nearest you. Walk-ins are welcome. I'm going to walk into the Illinois Bone and Joint Institute and ask them how my eyes are doing. And they'll say, well, sir, we don't do that. And I go, yeah, but I could walk right in. It's sort of like the old joke. Okay, I'll tell it to you. Steve, do you know this one? It goes like this. Two guys are looking around on the ground under a streetlight. And another guy comes up and goes, what are you doing? And they go, well, we're looking for a coin that we dropped. And he says, well, where did you drop it? And they say, way over there.
But the light's better here.
I want to do it.
I'm sorry. No one else saw it coming.
Our texts include these. John, there's a great documentary on HBO about Robin Williams, who also felt that he had to constantly be on. And a lot of other texts about Pete Davidson, too. Maybe we'll touch on some of those. But here's also a topic I'll pause and we'll come back with. And that is Hillary Clinton reached out to a young person who had lost a school election. And who better than Hillary Clinton to talk a little bit about the agony of defeat? And it, her letter is sweet. And it reminded me a little of Steph Curry's letter that he wrote to a child recently, too. And I'm asking you, not just as a child, but as an adult, have you exchanged a letter or gotten any kind of correspondence from a famous person? What was that? What was that like? What prompted it? A couple of members of our staff have had very interesting stories along those lines. Hillary Clinton sent a letter to a young girl who was 8 years old. She ran for class president. I'm not sure that you should have a class president when you're eight, but there it was. Yeah. I ran for class president of Manuka High School my sophomore year. Did not win. But I don't think about it much anymore.
I was president of my freshman class and then again my senior class.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm real happy for you, Steve.
I was defeated my sophomore year, John, if it helps you feel any better.
Well, as was I.
Went into the long political winter, but came back at a different high school for senior year.
Wow, now that's remarkable, because usually you got to sort of build up a core audience.
I knew I was never going to win with those people.
So is that why you transferred schools?
I had to move on.
Yeah. I think what really hurt my chances, and this is the God's truth, was we'd make little posters, my committee of Lloyd and I. campaign chair, Lloyd Johnson, nice guy. So we made some posters and kind of cut out colorful construction paper and framed maybe a yellow frame around some blue paper and then put, you know, John for class president, sophomore class, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Misspelled the word sophomore.
That's a tough one.
Who knew that there's two O's in sophomore? No, there's three. It's sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
President should have.
You're right. If you're going to run for the office, you ought to know what it is.
When I was elected senior class president, I wasn't even there for election day. My friend Brian Miller gave the speech.
Where were you?
I was at there was a congressman named O'Brien. George O'Brien was the local congressman, and he was having like a student thing, so I was there.
Well, I guess that's pretty good, though, right? He couldn't be here because he was with a member of Congress.
Right. I don't know if that came up in the speech, but...
Hillary says, it's disappointing to figure out that you lost something that you fought for really hard and you put a lot of effort into it. Like she would know. She said that she's happy being vice president. The little girl is, I guess, if you get the most votes, you're president. If you get the second most, you're vice president. In her letter to Martha, Hillary Clinton wrote, the most important thing is that you fought for what you believed in, and that is always worth it. My campaign was on longer lunch periods. That was one of the issues that we were fighting for. Otherwise, life was pretty good. You know, they said, well, what do you want? I go, I want to be class president. I don't know what I want. Oh, wait, you mean it's about them? What issues do we have? We're sophomores. As you continue to learn and grow in the years ahead, never stop standing up for what is right and seeking opportunities to be a leader. And know that I am cheering you on for a future of great success. Wow, what a nice note from Hillary. The Steph Curry letter to the little girl who wanted to have the shoes that she would wear not listed in boys' sizes, but girls' sizes, too, was just wonderful, not just for the way the girl expressed herself, but also for the way Steph Curry responded. And action was taken. She was actually able to institute change. So we, in our promotional announcement for today's show, said you exchanged a letter with a famous person. Who did you write to and what did they say? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call me now or text me and tell me who you wrote to and what did they say. You know, you imagine that this is something that happens for kids. You're in grade school or high school. Maybe you're some idealistic college kid and you wrote out to somebody for some advice or a favor. But it happens to adults, too. Two members of our staff have received a bucket as a gift of celebrity postcards or letters, you know, somebody reaching out on their behalf. In one case, a colleague said, for my 40th birthday in 2010 is the year, my husband sent letters to various celebrities around Chicago telling them about my 40th birthday and asking them to sign a birthday card that he attached to the letter. The birthday card envelope was stamped and addressed, so all they had to do was sign it and drop it in the mail. One of the many celebrities that he reached out to was then-Governor Rod Blagojevich. This was after Rod had been arrested, but before he went to trial or was sentenced. That sort of funny period where he was still accessible. Anyhow, to incentivize Rod to respond, he enclosed a $25 check made out to friends of Blagojevich. On the day of my birthday, my husband presented me with all of the cards. He had no idea what anyone wrote or even who returned them because they arrived at his parents' house sealed, and he left them as such until my birthday, right? You can't have them respond back to you at your home because my wife might see these cards, so you had to send them to a third party. I opened the card on the front above an So on the front of the Blagojevich card that he asked Rod to sign, it's an electrocution chair, and the card said, I hope you have a great birthday and get to do all of the fun things people in jail wish they could do. So that's the card that they send to Rod to sign, which, you know, to me, if I'm Blagojevich, I just throw that in the garbage, right? Because I might go to jail. I'm not going to go to the electric chair, but I'm not in any mood to have prison jokes at my expense. But he responded. Here's what he wrote, dated May 18th, 2010. Congratulations on turning 40. Happy birthday. Your husband sent me a letter about you. The whole thing was pretty much about how much he loves you and how devoted he is to you. He asked me to extend my birthday wishes to you. Happy birthday. Signed, Rod Blagojevich. Underneath that, it says over. You know, one of those little arrows, and then you flip it over because they wanted to write some more, as only Rod would. And on the back, he wrote, P.S., innocent of all charges. And by the way, thanks for the check, but I'm returning it. Times are tough out there, and your husband could put the money to good use spending it on you for your birthday. Well, that's not bad. That's not bad. that's very Walter. That's a very Rod Blagojevich. Jody, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Jody. How are you?
Hey, John. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I had a very interesting exchange with Walter Payton back in 1985, right before the Super Bowl. I was invited for lunch. I was part owner of a camera store, Elmhurst Camera, back then. And through Kodak, we had a chance to meet the Bears and have lunch with them at Hallis Hall. And, of course, everyone wanted to meet Walter. And he was gracious enough to take time, because they were practicing that day, and to take photographs and talk to. So when it was my turn, I, gushed like a little kid. I was a little nervous and told him how much, I admired him. And he spent a lot of time and asked what I did and had a picture taken. But long story short, fast forward to February, after the Super Bowl, he said, I had the picture blown up, matted and framed, and I had it in my office. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat to have him sign it if that's possible? I didn't know how to do that, so I went ahead and sent it to Hallis Hall, his people, and about 10 days later, I got it back in the mail in a box, signed Walter Payton's Sweetness with a really nice note saying how taken back he was that somebody would take the time and mat and frame his photographs and take the time to come up and meet him. And I thought that was just a really neat thing, and to this day, I have it in my office.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm glad to hear that. Anytime somebody says, I got a story about, say, Walter Payton or somebody we know and love, you hope it's a good story and not a bad story, because sometimes those people break your heart, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly right. And as busy as he was at that time take the time, It was funny. He asked me, after I took the picture with him, he said, wish us luck. And I said, sir, I said, you don't need luck. They have you on the team.
You are. You're their good fortune.
he kind of chuckled and put his head down. But thanks for letting me share that.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. Thanks for doing that. He and, Connie raised a couple of nice kids, too. John, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
How you doing, John? About 15, 20 years ago, I can't remember exactly when, my wife and I were at a White Sox game, and they'd sing the national anthem, and I'm a Vietnam veteran, and she could not believe how many people had their hats on. She says, I can't believe this. I'm really mad about this. And when we got home, she wrote a letter to Jerry Reinsdorf to say, hey, I'm at this White Sox game, and it's too bad that so many people are wearing hats during the national anthem. He writes her a letter back that not only are we going to announce this, I'm the owner of the Chicago Bulls, and I'm going to make sure we do this at a Bulls game. Now everyone does it all over, and every time she hears it, she always says to me, you know, it's my idea that everyone in the United States now are told to take their hats off during the national anthem. So I kind of tell her she's a celebrity.
Yeah, no kidding. How about that?
yeah, it's kind of crazy, but it's kind of neat. I love your show. You're just an awesome person.
Nice of you to call.
No problem.
Thank you, John. Have a good day. Send me a flat surface photograph, and I'll sign it. John, I sent a fan letter to Tom Wopat in the early 1980s, and I received a random face shot picture of him about 6 years later. 6 years later. I do that sometimes, though. People will send us cards and letters, and, you know, you just kind of, and so they start to migrate on my desk to a corner or over by my monitor, and they sort of build up, and then finally I say, I've got to attack this pile. And then you look at the bottom of it, and you realize some of them are months old, and you feel terrible about it, but you say, Dear Joe, I'm sorry I got distracted. Thanks for your note. Signed, John Williams, something like that. 6 years later. John, when I was in college, I wrote a couple of fan letters to columnist Bob Green, famously of the Tribune. To my delight, he telephoned me. But he seemed to lose interest when I mentioned my boyfriend. Years later, it was revealed that he had a penchant for young women. Yeah, he kind of got himself into trouble there. John, for my father's 70th birthday, we wrote to over 300 celebrities asking for a signed photo and a note with prepaid envelope. We received over 120 with great notes attached. One of his favorites was from Kurt Vonnegut. Steve, do you remember my Kurt Vonnegut interview? I'm a Kurt Vonnegut fan, too. I can't say that I've read everything he wrote, and I haven't read him lately, but there was a period of time where I read all the Kurt Vonnegut I could get my hands on. What a great, fascinating guy. What an interesting and troubled soul he was. In fact, Slaughterhouse-Five's 50-year anniversary is this year or next year. I was just reading something about how Slaughterhouse-Five, the 50-year, boy, is that possible? Year anniversary of that is right around the corner here. One other fun note about Kurt Vonnegut is the fact that when Mary Schmeek wrote that famous graduation speech, the internet attributed it right to Kurt Vonnegut. And so for years, people were appropriating it or stealing it from Mary Schmeek. They thought they were stealing it from Kurt Vonnegut. And one day, finally, on her voice machine, she picks it up, or she's checking her messages, and one of them is from Kurt Vonnegut. And he said, hey, Kurt, or Mary Schmeek, this is Kurt Vonnegut. I just wanted you to know, I don't even remember the exact content of it, but he acknowledged the confusion people had, and I think he acknowledged to her that it was a well-done speech or column that she had written, and congratulations or something like that, and he hung up. He just sort of randomly left that message for Mary, Kurt Vonnegut did. And back in the day, when you had a message machine, you would keep messages that you wanted. You know, your kid's voice, for crying out loud, a loved one who no longer is with you. You cherish that voice. But then the technology changed, so you've got this recording of it, maybe still on your phone or on that tape on your machine. And Mary accidentally lost that recording of Kurt on her phone, which is kind of sad. I have in the back of my mind a message from my son when he told us he wanted us to get a dog. So it's Grant's voice at about the age of, what, 8 or 10 or something like that. And this little earnest, nasally voiced kid saying, Dad, can we get a dog? Oh, I found a dog. This dog is so great. We've got to have the dog. Left it on our machine. And I saved that for years. I think I still have that tape. but I don't know what box it's in.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
That,
here's John Williams.
Was me. Actually thinking a big thought. You witnessed one even as it happened.
Wow.
It's like a meteor streaking overhead.
I did not know they made noise.
We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio on social media, WGN King John. That's how you follow us there. So here's the big thought I was thinking. I was just looking at some more text messages from you all about letters that you got from famous people. You reached out to somebody and they wrote you back, or you had some sort of correspondence. You know, in an era of text messaging, tweeting, and emailing, I don't know that a digital response back and forth would be as meaningful. Although, Lord knows, if a famous person likes your post or retweets you, you really feel good. You love that validation. And then you might go viral, right? And then you might tip. A lot of people will follow that famous person. And if they liked or retweeted you, then suddenly your thing explodes and it's so cool. But I don't know that that's them writing you a letter in their own hand. So, just a couple quick texts about that. John, in the late 1990s, I saw a celebrity in person at Carson Perry Scott in Yorktown. It was a Sunday, and I was going to approach him, but decided that it was his day off. That celebrity was you. Some of you are also reaching out to us, like this person from 5630, who said, I sent fan mail to Bill Leff, and I got a cease and desist letter back. I was so happy. And I think people should reach out to Steve Bertrand. I think you should send a letter to Steve Bertrand and ask him for a personal handwritten response and see what happens. Will he take the time? What will he say? What does his signature look like? That would just be so interesting.
Oh, it'd be fascinating. Yes, it would, John.
John, regarding letters written to someone we look up to, I'm reading to Obama, which are letters sent to him during his administration. It's an amazing book. I'm impressed and heartened that he implemented the staff to sort through the letters, and he took the time to answer 10 a day. I highly recommend this book to you if you have not read it. I have. It's heartwarming. It's nice to know that George Bush did that, too. 41, who passed away recently. Is that our guest on the line now? Good. Okay. On a phone line is Eugene Scott. He's a political reporter at the Washington Post, and he joins us now on WGN to catch us up a little bit on the Michael Flynn story. Hi, Eugene. It's John. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Steve's been covering it here, but just tell us a little bit there. What happened today?
Well, we know that Michael Flynn pretty much was lambasted by the judge, Emmett Sullivan, who was deeply frustrated with Flynn's actions and, I should say, disappointed by what he is accused of doing. He, you know, Flynn was an unregistered agent of a foreign country, and while serving as an advisor to the President of the United States and serving in a way that definitely left the United States at a disadvantage and could have caused great harm to this country for the benefit of his own financial gain and for a foreign government. And so there were discussions about whether or not Flynn would be sentenced today, and a decision was made to delay the sentencing. Both sides now have until, I believe, March 13th to file a status report with the court, and we will see what happens from there.
March 13th?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I thought we were going to get sent. What happened so dramatic that instead of today, we're going to wait 3 months before we get a sentence?
Well, we know perhaps prosecutors called for Flynn to get no jail time because he had cooperated extensively with the investigation. And so the judge, who wanted to sentence Flynn, was just really expressing his disdain for his criminal activity and wanted to give him an opportunity to perhaps make a case and prove to the judge that he should get no jail time, or perhaps less jail time than the judge was considering giving him.
Yeah, right. So in a sort of reverse sort of way, this extension actually is bad for Flynn, because if he was going to say no jail time, he could have said that today, but he's not ready to say that. He's essentially saying, I'm going to give you a little more time to make the case, because otherwise I might unload on you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the lawyers are certainly going to try to make the best case possible for Flynn, but it's not really clear right now that it's looking likely, and who knows what an ongoing investigation can reveal in terms of perhaps even more inappropriate activity in Flynn's part.
I wonder how unusual it is for the judge not to take the sentencing recommendation from the prosecution itself.
Well, we have not seen this situation like this before, and so it's really hard to compare apples to apples, but I think it's worth noting, and sometimes people forget the magnitude of what happened here because people are so polarized in their thoughts about Trump and his administration. But the president's national security advisor was working with a foreign government with their best interests in mind, opposed to the American public's, and there's just nothing comparable to that.
I understand that, but at the end of the day, and I don't know how compelling this is or not, but was there any damage done? It looked bad, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We all know how the election went and that the Russians did hack the election, but outside of the fact that Donald Trump became president, is there anything else bad that happened as a result of Flynn's situation?
Well, we don't completely know right yet, and I mean, perhaps Mueller does, and that has not been made public, but there's an argument that could be made about whether or not sanctions would have happened on Russia or affiliated countries faster had Flynn been more aggressive in terms of thinking of Americans' best interests instead of his own financially. We did see that there was Russian interference even in the 2018 election, and we don't know what impact that could have had on the voters that were targeted in the various elections that they were, scheduled to vote in. And so the degree of harm, I imagine, varies depending on which side, you know, of the aisle you fall on and whether or not the party that you were hoping to gain power actually did.
Does this also mean maybe that, in fact, to whatever degree he's cooperated with the prosecution, that there's more and more still to be revealed, that maybe he's talking to, I don't know, the Southern District of New York or somebody else? I mean, it sounds like they're actually giving him more time to testify or cooperate, right?
I think there's certainly more that we don't know, and that more can be revealed. Whether or not it actually will be revealed is not yet clear, but obviously this is ongoing and these conversations are continuing, and what can come out of that could certainly perhaps shape how a judge refers to Flynn within the next 3 months.
Well, did he expect that he was going to get sentenced today, you know, to zero time or a very light sentence? Is his team surprised by this, what happened today?
From those I've talked to, they were surprised. They definitely were expecting a sentence today. What exactly wasn't clear, but they didn't realize that they would walk away without a sentence and that things would move so quickly and be so brief.
Where is he then? He's not incarcerated, is he? Is he free?
I don't think so. There's nothing that we saw or have reported that suggested that he was
incarcerated. That is,
he was incarcerated. Yeah,
he's free to enjoy Christmas with his family and friends to the degree that you can. that's probably easier said than done. All right. Anything else that maybe we should know as a result of what didn't happen today, Gene?
Well, the main story that's up with all of this information on WashingtonPost.com is constantly being updated. So certainly if you could check back there. But as of right now, I think I've given you the nuts and bolts.
That's kind of what I was looking for. Eugene Scott's a political reporter there. Eugene, thanks for your time. Happy holidays. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy holidays to you as well.
It's one of those situations where you think, you know what, if I'm going to go to jail, I just assume go to jail now and get it over with. Let's get the clock going. Right? I mean, how merry is your Christmas going to be if on December 25th you're sitting there knowing March 16th or March 3rd, whatever he said it was? Sounds like you're going to go to jail. And I respect that. I mean, I know this sounds partisan, but I don't mean it to be. It seems to me like, you know, if the Mueller people got out of him what they wanted, that's one thing. But it's a judge's decision to determine how much harm you cause the country or what your penalty should be. Do you want to deter other people from behaving this way down the road? So you've got to do something about that. And maybe you take the prosecution's suggestion that you sentence him not as severely. I don't even want to say lightly, but it's at the discretion of the judge. And the judge sounds like he's not having it. 815, this texter said, "Hey, John, I wrote to Tommy Chong while he was in prison, and he sent me back a two-page letter. John, in 1961, we sent a letter to George Halas telling him we just gave birth to a future Bears quarterback, and we got a nice typed letter back, which he signed. Checked in with Max Armstrong, John, Midway Airport some years back, and got a note from him. Sky Cap Dan." In fact, this is funny because he still has that postcard, and he sent me a screen grab of it. "Hi, Dan. Thank you for your note about hearing me on the air as I was broadcasting from Minnesota." I'm looking for Max's voice. "Max Armstrong, you rascal." Sorry. "It is great to hear from you. Thanks for listening to WGN. I hope we'll meet again sometime. Signed, Max Armstrong." Yeah, Max is a good guy. 630, Geraldo Rivera. "When he was first on the air, John, I sent a fan letter. I said I thoroughly enjoyed the format of his new show. The response was from his staff informing me that Mr. Rivera is currently not dating." "John, I liked Bill Leff's Facebook page. He apparently checked my profile and saw my hometown, and he messaged me and told me that his wife was from the same small town. We had a nice conversation about growing up there." Yeah, Bill's a good guy, too. "John, as a kid, Illinois Senator Paul Simon was a pen pal. I had two letters from him, a cool piece of history, especially for a 10-year-old. Signed, Bill in Ohio. John, my dad was a cameraman for NBC Sports. He took me on a trip to Milwaukee to see the Brewers versus the Yankees in the 80s. I was on the field before the game, taking pictures of the players. Weeks later, my dad took my prized picture of Don Mattingly to another Yankee game. Don promised to sign it for me, and he did." That's nice, too. There's one other I was just going to pass along here real quick. LF, which one was it? "John, I sent a letter to Dan Walker in 1975 asking if he thought gas would ever go up to $1 a gallon. John, when my son Jack was in the first grade, he had to write a letter to a famous person and then read the letter in character. My husband, who loves history, had the little chap dressed in a bow tie and a bowler hat and read the letter that he wrote to the Lady Soames, Winston Churchill's daughter. Several weeks later, Master Jack Nelson got a packet from England with a lovely thank you note and several postcards of Churchill paintings. No kidding. It's in our safe deposit box." Nice notes, nice stories. By the way, we were talking about Michelle Obama's book. Heidi Stevens and I are going to talk about that on my show on Saturday. She read it. I read it. A lot of you read it. It's the number one best-selling book in America right now. And it's just a great Chicago story. It's a great American story. I'm a fan of the book. I was so touched by it. Anyway, if you do get that book or like that book, if you are a fan of her or that book, I'm going to recommend you a companion piece to go with it. Michelle Obama, the First Lady in Photos, 2009 to 2017. It's a small stocking stuffer size little hardback from Bantry Bay Books. Out of Chicago and Los Angeles. The people behind this are our own Steve Alexander and his wife, Diane. They do this kind of publishing. And this is just some remarkable photos that you remember and some you've never seen of Michelle Obama in various poses with various people doing various things and captions with them. If you're getting Becoming by Michelle Obama for someone, the pictures in this and this little book would make a great companion. It's called Michelle Obama, the First Lady in Photos, 2009-2017. You can buy it online. Bantry Bay Books. I got to read this too, don't I? Hey, Bulls fans, enter for your chance to win the ultimate VIP Bulls night experience at chicagotribune.com/Bulls Quiz, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune. Now, listen, you've had your dreams of seeing your name up in lights, but that hasn't happened yet. Well, now it can because Our friends at 2Ks have come up with that annual calendar we do at WGN Radio. It's an analog calendar. It's a thing on paper that you'd put on your desk or maybe tack to the wall. There's various styles that you can get. But the great thing about these is that you type in the name of the person that you want, and then that name appears in these beautiful photographic images of Chicago, maybe in the ironworks on a fence or in the clouds in the sky or in the waves on the lake. It's amazing how good this digital technology is. So online you order it, and then they send that paper calendar to you. It's a great gift for coworkers, family, friends. It's just a nice calendar for you to have because you need one, you know. How do you get it? Go to WGNRadio.com and scroll to the feature section. Go to WGNRadio.com and scroll down to the feature section. And check out how you can literally become part of Chicago. Hey, Lou, it's John. What can I do for you? You're on WGN. What's up?
Hi, John. How are you?
Good.
I don't know if anybody has a specific answer, but someday I just wish I could get an answer that I could sink my teeth into.
Yeah.
The other day, gas was $1.99 a gallon out where we live. Overnight, gas went up to $2.35 a gallon the next day. Yet, the price of oil is plummeting. What's going on? I mean, is there anything that I could really, you know, feel confident in hearing that will give me an answer?
No.
No.
I thought maybe one of your guys on the news on the market report would have some kind of an answer, because it just doesn't stand to reason.
It went from what to what for you?
Well, it went from $1.99 to $2.35 overnight.
Here's Andy Mazur in sports. Andy, 36 cents overnight.
36 cents overnight. Someone lost a bet on the Bears.
Steve, I wish that was it.
Steve, did you guys cover that? Steve's actually writing another story, so I don't know if he's listening to us right now.
I was just looking. We got an email from, I think it was Gas Buddy today, that says gas prices have fallen in all 50 states.
I tell you, I live in Bolingbrook, and all the gas stations were $1.99, and they were dropping even as of that point. Yet the following morning, there now, well, yesterday, they were $2.35 a gallon.
Boy, $1.90.
You know, check Gas Buddy, and they're all $2.35, $2.39 right now. I just don't understand what happened.
It seems like the $1.99 was the mistake.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, you come to my house because we're paying more than $2.35, and you got to admit, $1.99 was a deal.
Well, that $1.99 had been dropping because it was $2.09, $2.05, $2.03, et cetera, et cetera. And it dropped down to $1.99. Even a Costco was $1.98. And it's very frustrating when you want to go out and fill up your tank the following morning, and here's $2.35 a gallon. It's just, I just don't have an answer.
Okay, maybe somebody will help us out. Producer Elif just handed me an article, Why Are Gas Prices So High? So maybe this is talking about what you're talking about. Let me see what I can find out. We'll put it on the radio.
All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I don't have an answer to that real fast. I don't know. Oh, I think you should just count your lucky stars. You were getting it for under $2.
Yeah, Steve, I wonder if there's like a mini price war going on in the neighborhood.
It sounds really local, doesn't it? By the way, Lori, this is John. I got to get to the news here, but what did you want to say, Lori? You're on the air.
Oh, John, I just want to say Merry Christmas, and I agree with you about people being nice, and I just want to thank you and your family for being so nice to all our employees at the Flame while you were there. It's been 7 years, John. We still all miss it, and we miss you and Brenda and, you know, and the boys. Love to hear you on radio. And I agree with Lou. I'm out here in Downers Grove, and that's what happened over the last couple of days.
Really?
So, anybody has an answer, we'd love to hear it. But meantime, everybody be nice to each other. That's all I can say.
I didn't know that you were that Lori from The Flame. The Flame was this great old-school steakhouse on the south side of LaGrange. And not only was it our go-to restaurant, but it was our kind of, I didn't know this until later, but my boys, that was a really nice time in our lives. You know, when the kids would still go to a restaurant with us and we'd all four sit there, and maybe on a Sunday night, a special occasion. We were there a lot. The food was good. The staff was so nice. And the boys love that feeling of family we always had at the Flame.
Yeah, it's hard to find. So everybody go out there and support some of the family restaurants that are out there that are really trying to make a difference, you know, and the personal touch, you know, John? Anyway, love to you from us, all of us at the Flame. Joanne called me. I'm sitting in my car. Joanne called me. She said, you have to call John, you know, and I said, okay, I will.
Does Joanne still have a boat?
Yes, she does. Okay. She's in Burnham Harbor.
Tell her to invite me over anytime.
I will, John. I do have somebody's cell number, and I make sure to give it to Joanne.
Okay.
And she's right by the club there, and she just wonderful friends, wonderful people down there, John.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I will pass it along to Joanne for sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye, Lori.
Love hearing you, John. Merry Christmas.
What a
Bye.
Treat it was to hear Lori's voice. Haven't heard Herb. She used to work at the Flame Restaurant. I said LaGrange. I think it might have actually been a countryside, but what nice people they were over there. More texts coming in from folks who reached out to a famous person and got an interesting response. John, my English class is part of a project, wrote to Mark David Chapman, John Lennon's assassin in 1987. Well, that's a interesting class project.
I wonder what the parents would have said about that in the days of social media, had it been now, you know.
No kidding. I think that could have gone badly. But he wrote a 3-page letter, which we received 3 weeks later. Very insightful response. I still have this handwritten letter.
That's
odd.
And what would you think of that?
I would think that's...
If your kids came home and they wrote a letter to their teacher, was having them write to Mark David Chapman.
Well, I guess it would depend on what they were doing. You know, are they celebrity gawking, or did they have a legitimate question and did they learn something from it? But
when you shot him,
I know. I mean, finish that. Maybe there's something that the class could learn from and glean, but that seems to me like maybe a bad idea. 815, John. I have a letter that you wrote me in 2006 after getting the souvenirs I sent from our Jamaican trip that I went on WGN. John, regarding writing letters to someone, I was in elementary school in the 1970s, and it always bothered me how John Coleman on TV would give disparaging weather reports about the snow. I was always excited about the snow, so I wrote him a letter and told him so, and he wrote back and said, not to worry, there will be plenty more to come, and it was a really gracious note. John, I called WGN Radio one day with a question, and Orion Samuelson personally called me back. I recognized that voice immediately. I was thinking about Big O today because he and Bob Westrick and I used to every year talk about where the Dow would be at the end of the year. Did you vote on that too, Steve? We'd always sort of make our prediction.
No.
Where will the Dow be at the end of the year?
No, I wasn't close to that.
Once upon a time when a smart person could have a reasonable guess, Orion Samuelson got it right about 3 years in a row to within like a tenth of a point. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was like the Dow was going to close at 7,522 and he'd guess 7,521. It was just bizarre. And then the next year, he about nailed it. Folks started to call in going, hey, what does Orion say? And I thought, no wagering. Do not put your money on the line here. Oh, and one quick answer to a question before we go to Bob Westrick. This is about the gas prices. Mel has some insight onto that. Hey, Mel, you're on WGN. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Hi, Steve.
Hey.
This is Mel from McHenry. What's happening a week from today?
Christmas.
What always happens on holiday weekends when people are going to travel?
Gas prices go up.
Exactly.
So what that guy called in a little while ago may just be predictable, huh?
Very predictable, yes. Yeah. I once had a guy tell me in a gas station, an employee, I asked him, why did the gas prices go up every other weekend? He says, because payday's every other weekend.
You know, thank you for the call. That's an interesting point, Mel. I'm glad you joined us. I'm going to go from you real quick to line one, and that's Dave. Hey, Dave, what did you want to add to that conversation?
Hey, John, and by the way, happy holidays. As far as I can tell you, twice a year the gas producers have their little profit-making situation where they have the summer blend, and then all of a sudden they have the winter blend. So they bring the price of gasoline up to match the blend of gasoline they're going to be selling, and then when it gets close to being back down to where it should be, then they come back in and then they throw it back up again because then the summer blend comes in. They got to raise the prices because it's a summer blend.
Yeah, and there's usually a lag between the two. Hey, Dave, thanks for the heads up on that. Thanks for the call. The news click at WGNradio.com. Whose defense is better, The 1985 version or the current Chicago Bears? The 85 version or the Chicago Bears? Andy Mazur, 84% of our listeners said what? 84% said the 85 Bears or the current Bears?
Well, I think they're going to say the 85 Bears.
That's what I said. That's what they said, because the 85 Bears were better defensively.
I think that they were. There was a much more, there was a ferociousness about that defense. They put quarterbacks in hospitals, and they enjoyed doing it.
And you know, just to the person, they were awesome. There was not a weak link on that 11. And it wasn't just because they got one new player who sort of changed the dynamic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I asked Dan Hampton, I said, could Khalil Mack play on your 85 team? He said, where are you going to play him?
Oh, I don't know. That's so Dan Hampton. That is so Dan Hampton, though.
He said,
I think you'd find a place for Khalil Mack.
So you're going to kick Singletary out? You're going to kick Otis Wilson out? You're going to kick Will Marshall out?
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. That's a really good question.
That's what he said.
Now let's ask Bob Westrick what he thinks about that. He's the partner in charge of investments at Private Vista. Bob, who had a better defense? I always start our interviews with you when we talk about money by asking you about something that's nothing to do with money. Bob, who had a better defense, the 85 Bears or the current Bears?
85 Bears.
Yeah. Would you start Khalil Mack in the 85 Bears?
I would start Khalil Mack on any team of any time.
I know. He'd be my kicker. Are you kidding me? I'd get him out there.
He's crazy good.
He's crazy good. You know, we had that Lee Steinberg on, the agent that was, in fact, Jerry Maguire. Jerry Maguire was, you know, was Lee Steinberg. The movie was essentially about him. And he said that he is a generational player, Khalil Mack is, or at least that trade was. He said you could have 10 number one picks and have no guarantee that any one of those picks would be as impactful as Khalil Mack has been. That was if not a generational player, a generational trade, the way the Bears pulled that off.
I would totally agree with that. He's when they first got him, I was like, you spent this much money as a defensive player when your offensive line needs work and stuff, but holy Moses, he's worth every penny.
Speaking of pennies, hey, Bob, the market's been up and down, and down a lot lately. What's going on there?
Well, you know, what you see in the headlines is really what's going on. There's three things as I see it, really. It's, you know, it's the trade uncertainty, a.k.a. tariffs, or the possibility of tariffs, you know, between us and China. There's that Brexit uncertainty, which that's almost a coin flip, what's going to happen over there. And now, today, I would say, the big uncertainty is what's going to happen tomorrow with the Federal Reserve. I mean, more than likely they are going to raise rates, but it's going to be their statement, which I think is going to be impactful on the market. So is it going to be more dovish, or is it going to be kind of the same statement for how many rate hikes going forward?
Suppose, though, Bob, that we nailed down with certainty, you know, we had a better handle on trade with China, and Brexit was resolved, and we knew what the Fed was going to do and what they were going to say. And so the uncertainty about those issues was sort of taken out of the equation. We would have answers. But it seems to me like, isn't the market sort of fundamentally ready for a correction anyway? It's going to go down no matter what, or it's not going to rebound the couple thousand points we've lost anytime soon.
I don't, you know, once again, I can't predict the markets, John. I know you can't. I know Orion can't. But what I see out there, when you look at, you know, is the market real rich right now? Looking at, you know, the S&P is trading about 15 and a half times earnings, you know, on a forward-looking basis, which is pretty much in line with its last 10 years. You know, so you can't say the market's really, really rich right now. I think really if we can really get a trade deal with China. I mean, China and the U.S., we're the two biggest economies in the world. This is a big deal, you know, to global growth. If we can get that, if that's part of the uncertainty going away, I do think that we could get, you know, 1,000, 2,000 on the Dow. I mean, when you just look at the economics right now, I mean, interest rates are still really, really low. I mean, even though the Fed's raised a lot, the Fed's, you know, Fed rate's 2.5%. You know, you take inflation out of that, which is the real rate, it's almost zero. Unemployment, 49-year low. You know, banks, well-capitalized, no apparent housing bubble. You know, consumers are doing pretty well, too. Consumers' balance sheets are pretty well, you know, are doing well. They're not overly leveraged. You know, tax cuts helped a lot. And also, you know, a lot of them have jobs now. And inflation's low. So just the economic backdrop right now is pretty darn good. That's why I think if we really could get, you know, a trade deal worked out with China, and Brexit got worked out, so we understood how that would affect the global economy. And, you know, if the Fed says, okay, we're going to, you know, hike tomorrow, and then maybe three rate hikes in 18 and 19, we'll just, excuse me, 2020, we'll figure it out once we see more data, I think that potentially there is more room for the market to run. And I'm not saying trade on my, what I'm telling you, but I'm just saying when I look at the economics of what's behind the numbers, I could certainly see another pop in the market.
Well, I know everybody has their own horizon, their age, their investments, their strategies. I mean, that's what you guys are all about, is finding out what the individual is about before you even make a recommendation. But is it so you guys aren't, in general, going super conservative right now?
Well, what we don't do, John, and you know this because we've talked over the years many, many times, we're not market timers. On the margins, we'll do things. For instance, when interest rates hit generational lows, we're going to do things to hedge against rising interest rates. You know, if the markets were really, really overvalued on a historical basis, we'd be taking, you know, equities off the table. Growth has outperformed value in terms of the stock market over the past decade since you know, 2008. So now we're starting to tilt more towards overweighting, you know, value stocks over growth stocks. So we just do things kind of, you know, based on where we see the market turning to, but we don't knee-jerk say, now's the time to buy or now's the time to sell.
Well, I wouldn't call you knee-jerk if right now you were getting out of equities, but you're not. So I think that's the tell in your answer to me. You are not positioning out of equities right now.
No, John, and once again, you know, just to reiterate, a lot of folks think that you can time the markets. And the thing with timing the markets is it's not one decision, it's two decisions. You got to time, you know, you have to know when to get out and then when to get back in. Cuz I've seen people who think they're real smart get out and then the market goes down and they think they're brilliant and then the market snaps back and goes up. And they never got back in. And then all of a sudden, they're just not so brilliant. So most empirical studies will show that individuals can't time the market. So once again, I know it's boring, but, you know, you design your portfolios to support your planning. And then what you do is you just rebalance periodically, make sure what you're invested in is right, and make sure that you've got your proper, you know, long-term asset allocation. That's the key to long-term success right there.
I got a minute left, Bob Westrick. Bob is on a phone line. You've recognized this voice maybe if you've listened to this radio station a lot. He's the partner in charge of investments at Private Vista. I posted on my Facebook page, and maybe I should have asked you before I did, but it made me feel good, Bob. It was it's a two-year chart of what the Dow has done. So in December of 2016, it was at 19.7. And even though it's had a couple of zags down, the overall trend, even today, is you would like that. If in December of 2016 I said, how about this chart, you would say, yeah, I'll take that. Give me some of that. So even though we're going down right now and have been for since all of November, all of December now, but overall, the chart over 24 months looks very good.
And generally speaking, that's what it's going to do over your lifetime. And, John, I mean, since the 08 correction, I've had many, many phone calls with clients over the last 10 years saying, wow, this bull market's run too long. You know, let's get out. Let's get out. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't think you should. You know, sure enough, to your point now, it's a good thing that we keep our clients in.
Hmm. Well, I hope so. I mean, it's a buying opportunity. We were in Mexico last week, Bob, broadcasting, and everybody's, you know, having a fun Mexico vacation at a pool and at the beach. And we're listening to WGN radio down there, and Steve Bertrand does the Dow, like down 400, down 500. And people groaned audibly. They just went, oh, no. And I said, nope. Buying opportunity. I'm looking for the glasses half full. It was a glass of tequila, but I'm looking for the glass of tequila half full. And I said, buying opportunity, kids. Buying opportunity. I don't know what you think of that.
Well, you know, sometimes it's a buying opportunity and sometimes it's catching a falling knife. But certainly it's you know, all our markets now, not all our markets, but, you know, the Dow and the S&P are already in correction territory. They're both down more than 10% from their most recent high.
Yeah.
Okay. And the, you know, the Russell 2000, which is the index of smaller U.S. companies, is in bear market territory, down more than 20%. And actually, I'm not sure how many of your listeners really realize this. In the S&P 500, more than half of the 500 stocks are in bear market territory this year, down more than 20% from their most recent highs, more than half.
And yet you're still, I don't know, is optimistic the right word, Bob?
Well, I'm optimistic long-term. Once again, the markets go up and down for a lot of reasons, and I don't think the, actually right now, I think the main reasons that they're going down have to do with trade and Fed rate hikes and things like that. Like I said, the market's not wildly overpriced right now, and you can't say, oh, gosh, so many people are out of work. Well, they're not. We're at, you know, like I said, 49-year high, you know, in unemployment. You know, it's or low in unemployment, I should say. I mean, the economy is ticking away right now. So there's a lot of reasons if we can get some of these big uncertainties put aside.
Right.
That certainly there's probably a little bit, you know, room for the market to run.
I like the sound of that. Maybe we can resolve the uncertainty and we'll see at least something that doesn't upset our stomachs. Bob Westrick is the partner in charge of investments at Private Vista. Visit myprivatevista.com. Full disclosure, Bob's company manages investment funds for Brenda and I, and we couldn't be happier. This isn't a commercial. I think I need to disclose that, though. Bob, it's good to hear your voice, and thanks for
you
the
too,
thoughts.
You too, John.
Take care now.
Thank you very much.
Rokan and Advantis getting ready to inform and entertain.
Absolutely, John. We've got a lot coming up this afternoon and into the evening. Pat Brady's going to be here to try to digest what exactly happened in that courtroom with General Flynn and the complete unexpected circumstances there where the judge has given him a little more time to figure things out, but had some pretty tough words, harsh words for the general. We're going to talk about that and also the timeline of what happened. You know, the body cam footage is revealing a little more about what happened in that horrific situation with the two Chicago police officers killed in one day here, a devastating year for our city and certainly our police force. We're going to talk a little more about that. Ben Bradley with WGN-TV. Tom Skilling is here, and I want to ask him about this news with the polar vortex. A lot of scary headlines today to wake up to if you believe that coming up at the end of December, early January, some polar vortex is going to grip the country. And I want to see Tom Skilling, our man, will be able to tell us what to make of all that.
Show some kittens or something. Get a puppy dog and hold it up to the camera because you guys are on CLTV right now, you know, just to lighten the mood a little.
We need something, but we will talk about the Hyperloop. Elon Musk is showing it off to aldermen and city officials today to explain to everyone about how this is going to work, this billion-dollar project, Chicago to O'Hare, in minutes for just $25, and it'll all be done in 18 months, John.
Yes.
So don't worry about it.
Yes, and Steve Alexander was reporting on it today, and he said, as only Steve Alexander could, he put it this way, he said, the train will go 120 miles an hour, hurling people in Chicago. And Steve Bertrand said, I don't think hurling is the word they
want to
use. We
don't want hurling. I don't want to be hurled. I don't want to be vacuumed, which is the other thing I heard. You get vacuumed through a steel tube, and I don't want to be hurled. But it's all going to work out fine, and we're going to find out more about that because our man Alex Stone from ABC News is on the ground as close as any reporter was able to get to that demonstration. He's going to tell us what he saw in a top five at five you won't believe.
Have a good show.